morning and welcome to Shattered Lives, a lively, educational, and issues-driven radio show designed to tell another side of the story, to focus on and humanize crime victims, to enlighten and shine the spotlight on organizations and service providers, and to assist those who walk the path with us. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice. And with me, I have my co-host, delightful Delilah Jones, president of Imagine Publicity tonight. So I say welcome again, and I'd like to greet our social media maven in Myrtle Beach, Delilah. Come on down, as they say on The Price is Right. How are you tonight?
Good. How are you, Donna? I'm doing great.
Oh, I'm doing very well. It's a beautiful day here in Connecticut, and it's a nice day for kind of a change of pace show. And I just before I bring in Dee, I just wanted to say thank you so much to all of our audience with respect to this past week's events, just making a very brief comment with respect to the parole hearing that we had for the perpetrator of my dad's murder here. And you were so very kind in all of your support and in doing a wonderful post. And I have to say that, you know, the outcome was
just what you hoped for, and he's going to stay behind bars.
Yes, he certainly is. And yeah, and we'll have more to come on that. It's in the works. So I just want to say thank you so much for all my friends, my fans across the country for being supportive. It meant the world. And so, you know, without further ado, then I'd like to introduce our guest. Her actual name is Diane Kittle, but she's known in Connecticut country by Dee, and she has a wonderful retail business known as Dee's One Smart Cookie Bakery in Glastonbury, Connecticut, which is in Harford County. And tonight's focus is on health and wellness. And although when you hear some of the background regarding what Dee went through, I think we'll agree that we could kind of push the envelope a little bit and say that she has gone through a shattered life in her own way. And if we don't follow what's good for our own health and our own body, you could indeed continue to have a life that's just wrapped with all kinds of problems. And we're very much into this topic, aren't we, Delilah, in terms of our other colleagues?
Right. We are. We have several. Well, you've gone through the elimination diet, and another friend is going through it right now. So, yeah, we're very into this.
Yes, and we think it's important, and we need to educate people, because I think people think, oh, that gluten-free stuff, what's that all about? So Dee is here to tell us about her journey. Dee, welcome to Shattered Lives. It's a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for appearing with us tonight.
Well, it's really an honor for me to be with you tonight. I really appreciate your inviting me.
Well, like I say, it's our pleasure and a labor of love. You know, one thing that I mentioned off air that I was struck with is before I read your history, we really have a commonality here in that with all the trials and tribulations you went through with your health problems for many, many years, you know, you didn't let that stop you, your chronic illnesses and trying to find out what was wrong. And that kind of parallels with me and my 55 surgeries, as well as just, you know, someone that had a dream, had goals, and kept persevering and kept doing what she needed to do. So, you know, we're sisters in that way. And so I think that's wonderful. I really, really do. So why don't we, there's many things we could talk about. If your history is pretty fascinating. But would you like to tell us, first of all, what is it that you're involved what types of foods and what types of terminology do you deal with when you make the products that you do for your bakery? They're specialized. So can you tell us a bit about the terminology, and then maybe we can go into some of your medical history if you like?
Absolutely. The bakery really started as a gluten-free and dairy-free bakery. However, while I was doing my research for recipes and creating the recipes before I opened the business, I had about 200 tasters. So for 4 months after I was diagnosed with celiac disease, I went home and baked 7 days a week and learned a whole new world that I had never been exposed to with gluten-free flours and non-dairy products. And what I learned during this process of 4 months, each day I baked product and I brought it to all of these tasting families. And what I found out was gluten-free and dairy-free was just the tip of the iceberg. So I had people coming back saying, that's great, but I also need soy-free. And then the next person, we need peanut-free, tree nut-free, egg-free. And by the time I opened the business, it had evolved to not just a gluten and dairy-free bakery, but an allergen-free bakery. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, I thought if we're going to do this, we should do it right, meaning we should use organic ingredients whenever possible or all natural ingredients. And before we knew it, the whole GMO world was falling upon us. And I also believe that genetically modified organisms is the issue at hand today and the cause for so many of these food allergies. So for us, it's gluten-free, dairy-free, allergen-free, and most importantly now, GMO-free.
And what does that mean when you, just for the benefit of our audience and all of us, GMO-free? What is that about?
So genetically modified organisms started in the 1990s, and large food manufacturers started genetically modifying seeds. And mm-hmm. in doing so, they were genetically modifying not only with other genetic properties that they wanted to enhance their particular, say, soy crop with. So they were adding genes to seeds that would allow crops to grow in a geographic area that it wouldn't normally, or
okay.
in drought conditions. The list goes on. So they just kept modifying the seed genetically
mm-hmm.
in order to get the very best they could out of that seed. However, genetically modified seeds are also being altered with all types of chemicals. And it's not a surprise that these large food manufacturers also own the chemical companies.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So
it's become a very, very political and I mean, there's a lot of advocates out there now that are standing up against the GMO food companies and the chemical companies that are doing this. And are you a part of all of that or not?
Well, I'm a part of it in a couple of ways. First of all, as far as I know, I'm the only non-GMO bakery in the area, probably on the whole East Coast. It's very
wow.
expensive to take that type of position, because
mm-hmm.
my ingredient costs are so much more expensive than a traditional bakery, and I can't pass that full cost on to the customer. So our margins are much, our profit margins are much smaller than what a traditional bakery is. But honestly, if I was in
mm-hmm.
it for the money, I'm in the wrong business.
Well,
and that's okay with me.
Yeah. Well, that's where your heart is, and it's about health and feeling better and still having very good food. And I have to tell you, it's the tastiest stuff I ever have had within my limitations. And I've visited other places in the area, and I tell people at certain grocery stores, oh, don't buy this, just go to these, you know, and they'll, oh, really? And I said, yeah, this is where it is. So in any case, you know, you kind of had me from the first time I walked in, which is good, and then you just keep passing it along. With respect to that, I know that there's some legislation going on. There are at least three or four kind of semi-related bills when I tried to look it up online yesterday. And you had mentioned that there's some powerful lobbying interests against GMO labeling, including Monsanto, the Connecticut Farm Bureau, the Connecticut Food Association. Wouldn't you think that some of these people would be joining you in coalition? I mean, why are they so opposed to this? Does it all come down to money, Dee?
It absolutely comes down to money. I mean, you see fast food chains that have dollar menus, and
Right. That's
driven by cheap food. The reason that you see soy ingredient in nearly every prepared food now is because it's so cheap. The same thing with wheat.
Mm-hmm.
So
Right. All,
you know, these cheap genetically modified crops are literally crawling into all of our food sources because they're used as fillers to keep food cheap.
Yeah. Wow.
And there's a lot of money being made by the large food manufacturers like Monsanto.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we generally, I mean, I'm not an expert on gluten by any means or celiac disease or any of it, but I know from my own experience and my own self-knowledge, we think of gluten as something that comes in wheat. So we think if we cut out wheat, we're okay. But does gluten show up in other foods? And
absolutely does. Gluten is the protein that is found in wheat, rye, and barley.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, in the United States, the way that we commercially process oats, you might as well be eating whole wheat bread. It is that cross-contaminated from the ground up, because all of these crops are grown in the same area in the same soil. So you're actually getting cross-contaminated from the ground. And then it's getting cross-contaminated through the air so that your gluten crops like wheat, rye, and barley are contaminating the oats while they're growing. And then you have the farmers. And when I say farmers, I really mean food manufacturers that are then harvesting on the same equipment all four types of grain, and they're putting them in the same tanker trucks, bringing them to the same mill, and they're being milled on the same equipment. So by the time oatmeal is completely processed, it's completely gluten-contaminated.
Gluten-contaminated. But rice seems to be not in that category, right? Because the things that are allowable I can eat, it, you know, rice cereals or rice pasta, that kind of thing. Is that right?
Right. Rice does not have gluten in it. It was those four that I mentioned, wheat, rye, barley, and oats, simply because of the way we process them. So, but there's a whole other world of gluten-free flours and foods out there. And they're just now starting to get known by the general public. Rice is probably the largest option for gluten-free foods, whether it's eating whole rice or using rice flour as we do. But there are also all types of others. Quinoa, which is an ancient grain. Teff flour, also an ancient grain and very, very high in protein. Sorghum flour, the list goes on.
Mhm. Wow. I have a colleague I was talking to yesterday about this, and he was talking to a relative who thought that there was research with respect to with the processing of flour that maybe there was previously or now there was iodine in it, and that's what there was a change in the processing of flour, and that really was the linchpin in terms of making the difference in terms of whether or not you'd be allergic or not. And then there's the whole other story of why are all those people in Europe? Why don't they have this problem with gluten? Are their foods processed? Are they eating a lot more fresh foods than we are?
Well, first of all, also keep in mind that celiac disease was first discovered in Europe. And you carry a gene that predisposes you for celiac disease.
Okay.
I have the gene. I got it from, and I have more than one gene, so it's likely that I got it from both of my parents. And they do say that the highest incident in Europe is actually in Ireland and Italy, France. My ancestors come from France. So they really said that this was quite a European disease. So celiac disease has been around, for decades, actually hundreds of years. And it wasn't until the turn of the century during World War I, and the United States also, as you know, shipped wheat all over the world. But during World War I, in one Scandinavian country, they had a huge population of children who had distended bellies and what they called failure to thrive. They weren't growing at what was expected to be the correct rate of growth for children. And they were actually feeding these children toast, thinking that that would help their belly. So then World War I comes about. We're not shipping wheat to many European countries, and children are beginning to thrive, and the distended bellies are going down, and the health is coming back to this population. And no one made the connection that it was actually the wheat, the toast that they were feeding them to make their bellies better, that was actually making them sick. And so this doctor was doing the study, and he's saying how remarkable the health of the children are. And then the World War ends, we start shipping wheat again, and the kids started getting sick again.
Oh.
And that's how they actually made the connection to celiac in modern times.
I see. Wow. Well,
you do bring up a good point, and I'm sorry to interrupt you. You do bring up a good point.
Go ahead.
About Europe and how much healthier they are. The truth of the matter is we as a nation are getting sicker and sicker, much more so than, say, Europe as a whole. And there are a few reasons for that. First of all, genetically modified food is not allowed in Europe. I find many of my customers are going to Europe on vacation and coming back and saying, oh, my God, you wouldn't believe what I was able to eat. I was able to eat beef and not get sick. I was able to eat corn and not get sick. I was able to eat pasta. And the list goes on. And there are some things that we know. We know that Europeans eat much cleaner whole foods than we as a nation do. Very few prepared foods, and they don't allow GMOs.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's interesting.
Well, and too, they're more into making that daily trip to the market to get bread and fresh fruits and vegetables. They eat it that day, and they don't keep freezers full and refrigerators full of leftovers and food.
That is absolutely correct. And as a result, they're eating whole foods. They're eating pure proteins, and their proteins are not filled with antibiotics and hormones.
Yeah. And they're drinking wine. That's good for them, right?
Well, I completely agree with that.
Oh, to be in Europe. Oh, my goodness. You get on that and healthcare and oh, my goodness. Well, you know, that's fascinating. That, it just makes sense. I wish we, you know, I wish we could be at least a bit more similar, but I guess our way of life and the lobbyists and everything get in the way. What is the bill, the one that you're very concerned about, HB 6519, what is that specifically asking to do? Is it asking to just put GMO labels on all foods?
It is. So there are actually two bills in front of the Connecticut legislature right now. The first one is HB 6519, and that act specifically addresses labeling of all genetically engineered foods. The
mm-hmm.
second bill is HB 6527, and that
okay.
act is actually specifically geared to genetically engineered baby food and formula.
Mm-hmm.
So these two bills are in front of the Connecticut legislature right now. Honestly, they're both critically important. I hope that they get passed. I actually got a call last week from my area representative asking me how I felt about the bill.
Are you going to testify?
I haven't been asked. If I am, I absolutely would.
Well,
I was just encouraged that he called and wanted
yes.
to know my opinion. I was shocked.
Well, that's great. And, well, there are public hearings, and it is your right to go, and you sign up. And, you know, I think you'd be a wonderful spokesperson for this. And that's what they need. They need the public's input about this. And since you are so knowledgeable, I would definitely encourage you to do that if you possibly can break yourself away, you know, from the business for, you know, when they do that. I can, you know, tell you more about that off air if you like. But, hopefully this will be passed because maybe, how do you get past these powerful lobbyists? That's always the question.
Well, that's the biggest problem. California was the most recent state to try to pass this legislation, and it did not pass because the lobbyists were so powerful, and unfortunately,
yeah.
they're not providing, you know, truthful and accurate information
mm-hmm.
because, frankly, it doesn't benefit them.
Yeah.
And it was last year, last fall, that it actually went to Congress and didn't get passed, and obviously you can imagine why, because
right.
the lobbyists on that front was so much more than anyone was willing to take on. I mean, the politicians, frankly, when you think of the PAC money that comes from companies like Monsanto and Dow, I mean,
yeah,
it's hot.
It's like the gun lobbyists, really.
It's
I mean,
absolutely just like the gun lobbyists, Donna.
You're so powerful. You're right, Dee, but you know what? We can't let that stop us, and we have to try, and we have to, you know, form coalitions and go in there and tell them, you know, what you're telling us here. And that's why we like to have you here, because this show will be here in the archives forever with repeated listening. And it's a national voice. And that's the great thing. It's not a, you know, one and done. Can we segue a bit into some of your background? Can you tell us a bit about your journey, like that was alluded to in that great article that you sent us with respect to how did you start out, you know, what was it like for your childhood? Because you thought that you were eating the right foods, and then, you know, things started happening and you had all of these tests and surgeries. Can you bring us down that road a bit?
I sure can.
Okay.
And actually it began when I was about a year old, because although I wasn't diagnosed with celiac disease until I was 50 years old, as an infant, I stopped eating, and I was one of those failure-to-thrive children. And as a baby, I literally stopped eating. And my mother brought me to the pediatrician and said, oh, my goodness, what are we going to do? She's not eating. And the pediatrician assured her that to just wait it out. and let me play with my food. And, you know, put the food down on a tray, and eventually I will find a way to put it in my mouth. And ultimately that's what happened. But as a child, I was always the kid with the dark circles under the eyes and the belly aches. And I had all types of skin rashes. My mother always used to say that she could gauge my health based on what was going on with my skin on any given day. Mm-hmm. And I hated milk. So when I was forced to drink milk every day, no one made the connection that it's because it was making me sick. So
right.
as a child, literally from the time I was an infant, I had chronic ear infections, which they now know is all related to this gluten and dairy, because both gluten and dairy cause inflammation. And so it was causing inflammation in my, literally in my eustachian tubes, in my ears, and causing not only severe earaches, but ear infections, chronic ear infections, because there was so much inflammation in there. And so from that, it went on to, you know, I had belly aches all the time. And frankly, I was in GI distress because I couldn't eat dairy or wheat. And then by the time I was 9 years old, I was in debilitating pain. I started menstruating at 9 years old. Except for me, I was in chronic pain literally from the time I was 9 years old. And, you know, went from doctor to doctor to doctor, and they always patted me on the head and said, "It's growing pains, dear, you'll be fine." You know, I had periods that typically lasted 14 to 16 days. The first 5 days just totally wiped me out. I worked at a pizza parlor of all places all through high school, was rushed to the hospital more times than I can count, and I was finally diagnosed when I was 19 with gallbladder disease and also IBS and, you know, the catch-alls when they can't call it anything else. But I literally went through 2 years of GI testing, upper GIs, lower GIs, you name it, they've done it to me. And at the end of that, they just said, "Eat a bland diet," which
that
I did.
That was their answer. That
was their answer. And by then, I had taken myself off dairy because I had made that connection. And so it helped a bit, but it didn't help completely. And honestly, tell a 19-year-old to eat white rice and poached chicken, you know, it's only going to last for so long.
Right.
Which was the case with me.
You got to go to McDonald's, don't you?
I'm sorry?
You have to go to McDonald's once in a while, right?
Absolutely. And then by 23, even though I had taken myself off dairy, the debilitating pain was to the point where I could not function. And I had gone from one OBGYN to another and was not getting any results. So I literally made an appointment with the new OBGYN, who I had heard was more progressive. And I walked into his office and I said, "You're not going to examine me. We're going to talk. And at the end of our meeting, if you don't agree that you need to do a laparoscopy to see what's going on, then I'm walking out the door."
Good for you.
And we talked for an hour. I was then scheduled for surgery 2 days later. And that laparoscopy that was only supposed to be a, you know, 20-minute procedure was a 4.5-hour procedure. Because I was literally, I had stage 4 endometriosis. I was literally, every abdominal organ was covered with endometrium from endometriosis. And that's, and, you know, for the callers who don't know what endometriosis is, what happens is after you ovulate each month and the lining of your uterus starts to swell with blood, that endometrium would back out through my fallopian tubes, and that would then adhere. It adhered to my appendix, to my colon, to my small intestine. It had actually taken, my ovaries had actually were adhered with endometrium to the back of my uterus. In fact, so the procedure, the surgical procedure, was to literally scrape and cauterize all of that endometrium from all of my organs.
Oh, my goodness.
And he couldn't even get, he never got down to my actual ovaries. He said, I know they're there, but they're still encased. So 4.5 hours later, he comes out of the surgery. He looks at my mother and says, oh, my goodness, if she wasn't 23 years old and hadn't given me permission, we would have done a complete hysterectomy.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Now, all these years later, I find out that they have made a direct connection, correlation to endometriosis and celiac disease.
Wow.
And endometriosis is an autoimmune disorder. And the longer you go with celiac disease without being diagnosed, the more autoimmune disorders you develop.
Mm-hmm.
So it was only natural, apparently, that this was going to happen. And I have now known from all of, you know, I have so many customers that share their stories, and I can't tell you how many of my customers have had similar
experiences.
Yeah. For me, I was, after this 4.5 hour surgery, I had a 6 month recoup, and I was also put on the quote cutting edge therapy at the time, which was only 2 years in progress. This was 1981. So in 1979, they had started treating endometriosis with male hormone therapy. So because what they wanted to do is trick the body, stop the progression of female hormones, which they believed caused endometriosis. If you actually, you know, produce too many of these hormones, so they put you on male hormones. And when you read the list of, you know how they do the, this may happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was
the
a list.
The side effects? Or
the side effects was 2 pages long, and I got every one of them.
Oh, my goodness.
So I slept about an hour a day. Mm-hmm. I had the worst hot flashes you can imagine, to the point where my mother would wrap me in cold, wet towels just to try to keep the heat down. I had severe anxiety. I literally had to shave my legs twice a day. I mean, it was horrendous. And the problem was, there was no long-term study on this. This had only been going on as a practice for 2 years. So 6 months into it.
How long were you on those hormones?
And you're supposed to be on it for a minimum of 9 months. Six months into it, I said, I can't do this anymore. And it was also, back then, it was a $500 a month cost for these hormones. And so 6 months into it, I walked into my doctor's office. I put my, you know, half-full bottle of male hormones on his desk and said, I'm done. Sorry, I won't do this. And he kept trying to convince me to do it, to continue. I had to, otherwise I'd have to have a full hysterectomy. So 6 months later, I was referred to a hospital in Boston that was doing cutting-edge laser surgery. You know, laser was the brand-new technology, and they were using that on endometriosis. So I went to Boston, and they wanted to review me and my history to consider me for a candidate for this cutting-edge surgery. And, you know, at the end of the meeting said, I'm sorry, but you are too far gone. You're going to have a hysterectomy. And I'm saying, I'm 23 years old.
Yeah.
You know, all that means is if you take my uterus and my ovaries, I'm just swapping one set of problems for another. Osteoporosis, you know, cardiac disease, the list goes on if you're not creating those hormones. And they had tried a number of different hormone therapies on me prior to this surgery, and I had landed in the hospital every time I was on birth control.
Oh, my goodness. So, did all this lead to experiment, when you started the experimentation with respect to diet and creating your own things?
Well, you know, it was funny. I happened to be at my sister's house one day shortly after I'd come back from Boston and been rejected for laser surgery, and one of her friends was there, and he was telling me about the macrobiotic diet. And how it had done so wonderfully for so many people. So I went to see the guru of macrobiotics, Misho Kushi, in Brookline, Massachusetts, and he said, oh, my goodness, I can turn this around completely. And so he put me on a macrobiotic diet specifically for endometriosis. Little did I know that, you know, and macrobiotics is a plant-based whole foods diet for people who aren't familiar with it. And so I started this diet, which also coincidentally happened to be gluten-free. Within 2 months, I was the picture of health. I had absolutely no pain whatsoever. I felt like $1 million.
Oh,
and
that's amazing. That's amazing.
All of the pain was gone. And so I spent the rest of my 20s on this diet. And, you know, let's face it, we're talking the early 80s now. So we're talking about sourcing that food, you know, those ingredients, was much more difficult then than it is today. However, I was able to do it, and I brought my food everywhere. You know, if I went out of town, my car was filled with all of the food that I needed to get through the weekend. And I continued that through my 20s. However, then I took a job that required significant travel. And little by little, that diet fell by the wayside because as I traveled, I could not, you know, I couldn't go to a restaurant and order the food that I needed to eat. I couldn't find a store where I could even buy it and prepare it myself. So by the time I was 30, all of the symptoms came back. However, I was married at that point. I had 2 stepdaughters. I was traveling on business. You know, I was caught up in that, quote, American dream. And I sacrificed my health in order to do it.
Yeah.
And so I just, you know, I told myself, well, I know how to deal with pain. I'm just going to be the healthiest sick person I know.
Healthiest chronic pain person in the world, huh?
Absolutely. And I was resolved that I was not going to let this stop anything in my life. And it didn't, but, you know, it wasn't easy. And so then I went through, you know, you talk about the number of surgeries you had. I pale in comparison. But I had surgery every year to 2 years so they could go in and, quote, clean up the endometrium. Just to try to keep it at bay as much as possible. And so between having those surgeries every year to 2 years, I also ended up having, you know, my gallbladder removed and a number of other surgeries that all ended up correlating to what was ultimately wrong, and that being celiac disease.
Wow. And so what was the next chapter? Was that when your husband became ill and that kind of turned the tables for you?
It did. You know, it was funny because I had worked in medical equipment leasing for years and, you know, traveled to all of these medical trade shows, et cetera, and, you know, putting deals together so doctors could buy cutting-edge equipment. And every time, you know, every once in a while, I'd come home from a business trip, and I would look at my husband and say, I would just like to, you know, take off this business suit and open a bakery. I had always loved baking. And so the dream had always been there to open a bakery. And he would look at me and say, do you know how many cakes you would have to sell to make the living you're making now?
Yeah.
And so I would put it on the back burner. But by the late 1990s, my husband was beyond chronically ill. And the last 3 years of his life, he was disabled. He had been, an officer in an insurance company for years, had a big job in Boston. And you name the illness, he had four different cardiac conditions. He had severe diabetes. He had secondary pulmonary hypertension. The list went on. And by the last 3 years of his life, he was in the hospital much more than he was home. And, there were times that he was in the hospital for 60 days, which is unheard of in today's medical community.
Definitely.
And every day the doctor would say, yeah, this is probably the last day. And then somehow he would pull out of it long enough to come home. And so I was also dealing with the trauma of constantly expecting my husband to die.
Of course. How did you deal with that on a day-to-day basis? This show talks about the aftermath and the coping. Just, you sound like such a trooper going through that, trying to hold it all together.
Well, the one thing that I immediately did about a year and a half into his chronic illness, I said, this is going to kill me before it kills him, just from the stress of it all. And so I decided that I was going to join a gym and I was going to work out every day, come hell or high water.
Good.
And I did. And I also, I got up every morning and told myself every morning I had to go outside and look up. And that somehow would give me the energy and the peace of mind to go on. And so I worked out and I did everything. I do believe that it's a conscious choice on how you're going to feel every day. And my choice was, I was going to have joy in my life every day, no matter what. And I was going to make that happen. And I did. And believe me, some days were easier than others.
Of course.
But it was a conscious decision that I was going to find light wherever I could, find joy wherever I could, be healthy as much as I could, and do everything I can in my power to stay positive. And that's what I did.
And enter the dream of the bakery then at that point?
So my husband passes away.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm dealing, at 45 years old, I am now a widow and dealing with all of the paperwork that you deal with after you lose a spouse. And so the first 4 months, literally, that was a full-time job. After he had passed away, I had taken a week off, obviously, to take care of arrangements and everything else. And I was on my way. I was in the limousine with his family members on the way to the cemetery. And my number one client called me and said, all right, you've already been off 4 days now. He's dead already. It's been coming for a long time. When are you getting back to work? And I said, you'll excuse me. I'm on the way to the cemetery. I'll call you next week. And I hung up.
Oh, my goodness.
And so a week later, I'm driving back to my office.
Yeah.
And I pull into the parking lot, and I was paralyzed. I could not get out of the car.
Yeah.
And so I called, I worked for a big national company. I called my human resource person in New York and said, I can't do it. I need another week. I cannot bring myself to go into that office. And she said, okay, take it. And so I spent another week at home and, trying to literally put the pieces back together. And a week later, I did manage to get back into my office. And the next call I got, again, was from the president of my largest client saying, I can't believe you took another week off. How dare you? You know all the deals we have in the pipeline right now? You need to get and just started. It was crazy. So I literally said, you know what? I'm going to connect you with another representative. I'm going to call my boss in Chicago. We're going to get someone. And keep in mind, they were my number one account for the past 10 years. They were my bread and butter. I lived and breathed for them. And dropped everything at a given notice anytime they needed anything. And all of a sudden I thought, wow, life has to be more than this.
Yeah, and I bet you had an epiphany there, you know, that this is not what the future should be.
It's exactly what happened, and so I quit.
Good for you. You know, we've got like about maybe like 13 minutes of our show, and this is just a fascinating story. We should have you on for 2 hours, you know.
Well,
but,
you know, Donna, when you asked if I could talk for an hour, little did you know.
No, I know. I just want to see if perhaps you can give us insight into the beginnings of the bakery, perhaps, and how you did that. I know you went to pastry chef school, right? And what would you like to tell people with regard to what you're doing now, your goals, and maybe some of your menu and all of that?
Absolutely. Well, you know, after my husband passed and I quit my job, and after I got all the legal things taken care of, I went back to school to become a pastry chef. And so I was working in that industry for 4 years, but getting sicker and sicker and sicker, not realizing that I am now in flour every day. And I had, along with all my other symptoms, I had horrific joint pain that was unexplained. And so my doctor was trying to diagnose me. Every 6 months, tested me for rheumatoid arthritis and Lyme disease. And after 2.5 years, I looked at her and said, you know what the definition of insanity is, right? So we're not going to do this anymore. And so I was actually, a friend referred me to a naturopath. I did the elimination diet and was diagnosed with celiac disease, dairy allergies, and a number of, of other food allergies. And the day after I was diagnosed, I went to the health food store. I bought everything I could find gluten-free. I brought it home, and I couldn't believe how awful the food was. It was like bricks in sawdust. And then I literally looked up at the sky and said, oh, that's what this journey was all about. This is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
So I spent 4 months creating my recipes and then looked for space and literally opened the business on a wing and a prayer in the worst economy that our generation has ever known. You know,
right.
I started this business in 2008.
And when was the crash?
In 2008.
Yeah. Wow. You have courage, Dee.
You know what? Everyone thought I was crazy. Everyone said, really? You think you're going to have enough business to support a retail gluten-free bakery? And at that point, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. And I was 100% committed, and I just believed, no matter what anyone said, this was going to work. And so we opened in, you know, the soft opening was October 30th of 2008. The actual opening was November 4th, 2008, and we haven't looked back since. You know, I started, it was me, one other baker, one part-time retail person, and a part-time dishwasher. Now I employ 11 people, and we have 4 full-time bakers. I mean, literally, the ovens are going from before the sun comes up in the morning till about 6 o'clock at night. I probably work 100 hours a week, if not more, and I love it.
Do you sleep?
You know.
A little bit?
Here and there.
Here and there. Oh, my goodness.
To give you an example... This morning I was up at 3:45. I was baking donuts by 4:15.
Yeah.
And when we finish this up shortly, then I will be back in the bakery closing up for the weekend. And that's not my longest day.
That's not your, oh my goodness.
But honestly, I've never had more energy.
Well, that speaks for itself, then, what you're doing. Delilah, do you have some questions you'd like to ask at this juncture toward the end here? I have a few of these, but wanted you to come in.
I think what you're doing, Dee, is absolutely fabulous. And I think
when you start
a business venture like you did, and it stops really being a business and it starts being something else. When there's other
passion.
People out there that have the same symptoms and ailments and they know there's something that can help them or there's hope for what whatever their symptoms might be, they're going to buy it.
The great thing about this, when we first opened, people would walk in and there were one of two categories because there was nothing like my bakery that existed back then. You know, five years ago, believe it or not, a lot has happened in the gluten-free world in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The concept of someone being able to walk into a retail bakery and purchase food safely, that concept didn't exist yet. So at the time, we had tissue boxes all over the bakery because one of two things happened. People literally danced, jumped up and down in laughter or started crying because they just couldn't.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
we
wow.
were constantly handing out tissues to people. Several times a day, you would hear one of us say, oh, got another crier. And it happens today, but not to the extent that it happened when we first opened. And it also gives me, I mean, nothing fuels you more than a family coming in with a new diagnosis of celiac disease or food allergens of whatever type and a little boy or girl looking up and saying, Mommy, what can I eat?
Yeah.
And she looks down at them and says, you can pick out whatever you want. You can eat everything here.
Yeah.
It is the most powerful feeling you can't imagine.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's incredible. How have you done your marketing? Now, I know, you know, you have a website and you just, like, revamped it. I love it. It's wonderful. You have you're on Facebook. Is your business mostly word of mouth, I mean, locally, or do people know about you in southern and northern New England? You've had national articles written, correct?
I have. Well, first of all, even before I opened the bakery, I was contacted by Living Without Magazine, which is the largest gluten-free, allergen-free national magazine in the country, and they had asked me to write a cover story for them. This was even before the bakery opened. And so even before I've opened my doors, I'm getting national coverage through this magazine. And so I write for them, you know, their magazine comes out every 2 months, and I try to write for them at least once a year. I'm involved in a project right now. Living Without Magazine is doing a, quote, celebrity chef cookbook, and I am one of six chefs that has written this cookbook. It's coming out this year. And so, you know, I've gained a lot of national exposure through my association with Living Without, but more than anything, it's word of mouth. And I have customers from Maine to Florida. I have customers out in California. We do ship product as well.
Yep.
And every time I write an article, or you wouldn't believe that I can't tell you the number of stories of customers of ours that bought product to get on a plane because they were making a trip and mm-hmm. happened to be sitting next to someone who had celiac disease or a food allergy, gave them my card, and they yep. live in Georgia. And literally, I have cards that have been passed through customers, word of mouth, all over the country.
Hey, I brought your stuff to South Carolina.
See, there you go, Donna.
Delilah, right? Am I telling the truth?
Exactly. Yes. Oh, yes. I've tasted your baked goods, and they're wonderful. And it, what's so cool about it, too, is I discovered we have a baker here, and she came into the office one day and brought us some samples, and she's kind of doing the same thing. She doesn't have a retail store open yet, but she is working on it, and she does have a couple grocery stores here locally that are carrying her goods. So I'm happy to say we have Mrs. Seabiscuit here.
There
in
you go.
Mrs. Seabiscuit.
It's amazing. It's amazing. You really, you're not losing anything by eating that way.
Not at all. And because gluten is an inflammatory, you know, we're not just talking about people who have celiac disease, but Crohn's mm-hmm. disease and rheumatoid arthritis, frankly, any form of arthritis, MS, MD. The list goes on, the number of people who are on a gluten-free diet.
Yeah.
Just because they need to get the inflammation down, and inflammation causes disease.
Yeah. In my case, psoriasis. Yeah.
Well, psoriasis is greatly linked to both dairy and gluten as an autoimmune mm-hmm. reaction.
Right. Right. So I know it's it wants to be my best friend, but I don't want it to be.
I don't blame you.
You know, can you in the remaining 2 minutes we have here, can you run down a little bit about your product line and also contact information if people want to get in touch with you? What would be a main goal of yours for the future too? Because we're gonna have to have you back because you're such a wealth of information. We're gonna book you again sometime here. Okay.
Well, we do everything from the basics. Breads, and we make fabulous breads in more varieties than anyone could think of, from oatmeal to rye flavored sandwich, harvest, the list goes on. Obviously that's everyone's staple in the gluten free world, but we also, every holiday, we do pies, and anyone that has tried to make gluten free pie dough appreciates the fact that we make pies, because it's one of the most difficult things to master. But we also do everything from muffins and coffee cake to, cupcakes. I mean,
pizza.
Cupcakes are through the roof at our bakery. Donuts. In fact, we just won the Best of Hartford Best Locally Made Donut 2013 for the Hartford Advocate. And that had nothing to do with being gluten-free.
Well, that's a major thing. You know, you're competing with, all these, sugar, Dunkin' Donuts and all those kind of places.
Exactly.
Congratulations. That is wonderful. You know, that's really good.
We're also doing pizzas. I mean, anything that you're thinking in the gluten world, we're replicating in the gluten-free world.
Yeah. Well,
and we're also supplying a number of restaurants in the area.
Sounds like there's nowhere to go but up, but you need to clone yourself, Dee.
Therein lies the problem.
Right? Oh, my God. You know, this is just truly amazing. How can people get in touch with you if they want to see more of your product line? Because even if they're not in southern New England, you'll ship to them. So all you people throughout the nation, I want you to be able to order her goods. So tell them how we can do it.
So the business name is Dee's One Smart Cookie. We're located at 398 Hebron Avenue in Glastonbury, Connecticut.
And I've lost all sound.
I'm sorry?
We have lost sound? Hello?
I'm here.
Delilah?
It's 6 o'clock.
Oh, on Blog Talk Radio. Well, Dee, if that's the case, you know, we will put up all of your contact information. And I'm also going to be doing a extensive blog tomorrow, and I'll send you the link. We'll have all that up there.
Terrific.
Okay, my apologies for this technical glitch, whatever it is.
Donna, you do not need to apologize at all. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh. All right. Delilah, are you there? Hello? I don't know what happened, but hey, I will get back in touch with you real soon then, Dee, okay? I guess we're off right now. I'm sorry. Our time is up, but I will do the blog tomorrow. We'll embed the podcast. I'll send it to you, and it will be in there so that everyone can listen again. All right?
You are a godsend.
Oh well, no, I'm not. I'm just a normal person, just like you. All right, I'll be in touch, and I'll be back in the store. All right?
Sounds great.
Thank you, Dee.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye bye.